Meeplemite, episode 23, a podcast argues over treasure. Welcome to Meeplemite, a podcast about board games past, present, and future. In today's episode, we review Libertalia, Winds of Galecrest from Stonemaier Games, and then discuss some of our favorite gaming memories. I'm Andrew Caprell, and here's my co-host, Josh Knight.
Good evening, everyone. Thanks again for tuning in. Well, for tonight's little personal section, I figured I'd cut straight to the chase and say we have very good news on our end. We were finally able to secure a house.
Yeah, that was... I mean, you took a couple trips down, I think, or...
Yeah. Multiple trips. Anybody trying to find a house now, it's like one of the worst times to buy. And of course, we didn't have an option to rent because nobody rents to people with dogs or very hard to. So we found the perfect house, and we're truly excited. And the actual experience, we talk about stories, our favorite board game stories, that actually came about because this story of finding the house where last Sunday, drove down, woke up at the butt crack of dawn, drove down to South Carolina, and checked out properties, realized this was truly the one, put an offer in, got it accepted, and drove back. Such a whirlwind of a day, but one we'll never forget.
Yeah. And I think this house is very near to Matt and Katie, right?
Yep. This house is in the same community as them, our friends Matt and Katie, probably about 100 yards away if you strip through the trees in between. So I could, you know, me and my big arm, I could throw a football to their backyard. Yeah, sure.
Or you could walk there at least, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Who walks?
That's a good point. We did see a kid today while we were out walking with the kids. I think this kid was maybe 10 or 11, but he had one of those hoverboards. Scooters, you know, where you just, yeah. I was like, oh, I don't, those are things that seem so cool and I want to try one, but I'm also very mad at their invention because they're just lazy.
Yeah. It's,
if they went faster, I see the purpose of it.
I would disagree with that. I think if it was faster, I'd feel even less secure.
Oh, yeah, I just mean like it does nothing. As far as like, it's not something that helps transportation in any sort of way. So it's literally just for whatever distance you were going to walk. Now you're just going to hoverboard it.
So you're talking about like the moving platforms the
Segways,
airport. I'm just thinking about that. Like help. Like, yeah. But in all actuality, you're just going slightly faster than you were already should have been going.
Yeah.
Oh, you old man, you.
Ah, kids nowadays are going to be so fat.
Well, that's true. Yeah. I can sympathize with that one.
That already was happening when they made rollerblades for our generation.
Oh, I miss rollerblades.
I know. We're saying we don't see those. But on my end, we've had a kind of a blast from the past couple of weeks. The last two weekends, we had some friends that have come in town. So yesterday was some Navy friends came in town. And so they're still active duty in the Navy, and I got out after my first 4 years. So it was kind of nice catching up. It'd been 6 years since I'd seen them. And they were a group that I lived with one of them as I was getting out of the Navy. So it was really probably my best friends while I was in the Navy. So it was
nice.
It was fun to see them again, and they got to meet our kids because they'd never seen them. So other than, you know, pictures for if they keep up on Facebook.
I guess so. If you hadn't seen them for 6 years,
it's crazy. And then 2 weeks, sorry, well, 8 days ago, I guess, we saw some law school friends, and they actually moved back into Charlottesville. So we're hoping to see them somewhat regularly. And they like the idea of board games. They're definitely not unlike, they're not on your level, and I don't think they ever will be.
That's okay.
But, you know,
I might have a pathologic diagnosis.
But I mean, we played Wingspan with them, so I think they'll play some stuff.
That's fantastic. Yeah, that was actually, you talk about playing things. Veronica and I were just discussing playing video games.
Oh, yeah. Because
we had invited some friends over on Friday night to play Mario Kart.
Oh, nice. Like on the Switch or the Wii or something?
Yeah, the Switch. And they came out with some new courses. I admittedly, I'm pretty good at that game. And I thought by having new courses, it would kind of like level the playing field a little bit. Yeah. I know that's kind of egotistical thought, but we had them over. We had a good time. And then we were just discussing it a few minutes ago that, you know, I don't play a lot of video games anymore. Mm-hmm. It's just not my go-to trying to decompress. And it's because, you know, I do so much work on the computers.
Yeah, you're right. At work. Your eyeballs feel like bugging out.
I don't
want
to do it when I come home.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting to see kind of the hobbies or the things we choose to do. It's kind of a little bit directed by work, but also just kind of as we age, like, you know, I could have done this job in my 20s, but now that I'm getting a little bit older now, I'll be like, you know what? I don't feel like playing video games and doing that as a job. I'm going to do board games pathologically.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I mean, we're not alone, I guess, right? Because there's a growing sect of board gamers out there.
When you say we're not alone, I was thinking about aliens.
Oh, yeah. Well, aliens might have board games, too.
They might. You know who else has board games? Pirates.
Oh, yeah. Maybe we could talk about them. Today we review Libertalia: Winds of Galecrest, designed by Paolo Mari and published by Stonemaier Games. In the world of Galecrest, sky pirates set sail on the winds in search of adventure, treasure, and glory. As an admiral, you command a vast and varied crew. But so do your rivals, sailing other ships in the pirate fleet. Each day the fleet lands on a different island where you'll send a crew member to collect your share of the loot, hoping they'll return to boost your share. Is Libertalia a treasure chest worth sending your crew out for? Or is it a cursed relic that would be a blight upon your gaming collection?
So in this game, you are given a 40-card deck, a few doubloons based on reputation track positioning, and a scoring dial. Now, you're ready to play. One person will shuffle and draw 6 cards. Everyone else will then search their decks for those same 6-numbered cards. Each turn, you will play a card. Each card has an initiative number as well as various actions. Once everyone picks a card, they are lined up based on that initiative order from lowest to highest, and their day actions are activated in this order. Then, in reverse order, dusk actions are triggered and a treasure tile selected. These treasure tiles may activate when taken or later during the sail phase. If you still have a character card, then it goes into your ship along with your treasure, where any nighttime actions are activated. Do this a specific number of times depending on the first, second, or third voyage. Once a voyage is over, you activate any sail actions for your treasure tiles and crew members, and then convert your doubloons into gold on your score dial. Most money wins, and a good score appears to be around 100, although that would be very generous based on some recent plays we've had.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on the cards you have and the tokens that come out each day.
Very much so. But that was some of the ones that I was experiencing with solo. And then when you play multiplayer, it's nowhere close. Yeah. But I figured that'd be a good target.
Yeah. All right. Well, here on Meeple Night, we'll start our reviews, which it's been a while since we've done this. So it's a good thing I have my guidelines in front of me. this is not memorized anymore. We'll start with our first impressions and aesthetics. I guess I usually go first.
You do.
Steal. I don't like to give you any. Let you steal my thunder because I don't have notes written down, so I'll forget. So I really love the art on this. I think this was a huge improvement. So this was a second edition of the game. So I think this was one that Jamie Stegmaier liked a lot. the first edition and enjoyed playing in gaming groups. So wanted to bring back to the hobby because it was hard to get your hands on. And so the art was a huge improvement in this case. I liked the retheming from regular pirates to sky pirates, mostly just because it's kind of a little bit more fantasy-ish. I mean, most of the pirates we play games on are, or read books about, are fantastical versions of pirates anyways, but this is a little bit extra fantasy, and like the airship thing is kind of a cool theme. It reminds me of Final Fantasy, so I like that.
Yeah. I was thinking of Treasure Island.
Disney. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's, and that might actually be even better because that is straight up Sky Pirates. Mm-hmm. I think the only thing that I was concerned about, I think it was Rotto that I watched the video of, when I was determining whether I wanted to pre-order this or not, when I saw it, it seemed to me like it's a good high player count kind of game. And so that was my only worry. That's kind of first impression. Oh, sorry. Also, an aesthetics component quality is through the roof on this. It's like Azul level tiles.
Yeah, I don't know what that material is. Backlight or back? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Cool plastic tiles that look like Starburst.
Yeah.
It's my first impressions. So I've never played the original game. I've seen it on Dice Tower and it looked fine, but it wasn't like one of those, if I saw that box, hey, I want to play Libertalia. Right. But at the same time, if you have your ear to the in the hobby, a lot of people talk about this game, how great it was. And it was out of print for a long time. So I'm really grateful that I had an opportunity to play this new version. So I had some excitement going into it. I agree with the art. I thought it was very colorful. But I do know that some people were turned off by this because if it's a pirate theme, they didn't want it to be playful, jovial.
Mm.
And instead, I disagree with that because art style, I forgot to write down the artist, but it reminded me of Mr. Cuddington, who has done whimsical designs for games like Funfair and Tidal Blades. The anthropomorphic animals, however you pronounce that, aren't really my jam. But at the same time, there's just something about the jovial nature of the art style that kind of gets you in the mood.
Yeah, and I think it's more welcoming to just non-hobbyists in general. I like that lighter, more colorful. It's Lamaro Smith. I don't know any other games there that he or she is. He, definitely a he.
Oh, it's fantastic. The only other thing I would touch on for first impressions is super easy setup. When you brought the game back the other night, I think we had it set up in 5 minutes, maybe, if that. Yeah. And, you know, that's a huge plus. This is one of those when you're taking a consideration of, is it going to take me 30 minutes to set a game up? Or is this something that I could pull the game out on a weeknight and get a quick game in? Super easy to set up and tear down. So I applaud the insert that they have for this.
Yeah.
And then that kind of goes into the rules. So I thought the rules were very clear. I actually love the section that showed the changes from the original game because it shows improvement, right? Hey, we saw this, this, and this. This is what we improved on, or this is how we tweak things a little bit. I like that. I did have a few questions when it came to playing the solo part. So that was a little... Solo rules were in a second rule book. I love when they do that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it needed just a little bit more explanation. But I'll take it. And then for videos, Rodney and Watch It Played had a great video. And I actually thought the two-player rules that they implemented, which was new to this one, was really cool as well.
Yeah, I like the two-player rules just because that's what you touched on last. I think that was a good... I don't know if it was an addition. I think it was. And it did a good or a decent job of mimicking 3. It wasn't spot on, but it was you had 3 people or 2 other people to deal with when you were the playing by yourself.
Yeah. And so that one, just for listeners, explaining the rules, it had I think it was called a midshipman.
Yeah.
And that initiative was 20.5. So you could have a 20 card in your hand or a 21. And that would kind of depend on which side of that character you would play. And that would be dependent on, you know, your your initiative order and like all that kind of stuff. So it was a really cool, easy implementation to make this a two-player game.
Yeah. Yeah, and then it made it so it was like it automated who was going to discard a tile each turn. And so instead of a lot of two-player games, in order to scale it, they'll just shrink down the number of tiles that come out or something like that. And then that kind of hurts the variety that you get to deal with. And this didn't do that. And sorry, I know that wasn't, this is a little bit on gameplay. I'll scoot away from that. And I think I agree. Rules reference. I didn't have to watch a video. I watched the Rotto to determine if I wanted to buy it, but I didn't have to watch it for a rules reference again a month later. I just read the rules, which I think were like two or three pages of actual reading.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was good. I agree, though, even on the multiplayer side, I think it was missing just that one page appendix at the end that just gives extra clarification for any questions. Because I know one of the ones that we had a question about was, I think, the hook. And I don't remember if it was the stormy side or day side. I don't remember what our specific question was anymore, but we couldn't. We just came to a consensus as a table of what made the most sense reading it.
Yeah.
But like you could maybe finagle a different way to read it. And so that'd be my only downside. The rules, they kept it a little too simple.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what about theme and setting?
Yeah. I mean, I think the theme does a good job here. And I think it would be because like the saber tiles are generally the ones that are getting rid of your opponent's other cards. And so you're like having a sword fight. The treasures are worth the most points, the most gold. Makes sense. Maps, if you're playing on the more difficult side, are directly related to getting treasure chests. And if you're not, then they're a set collection. The more maps you have, the more they're worth because it's more likely to lead you to treasure. So, you know.
Yeah.
I'll give that thematically. Relics are like the whole black pearl thing. You're getting cursed treasure. What am I forgetting? Barrels and amulets.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I think those are all things that pirates would be looking for. I think, and the art is kind of what does the final tie-in for me on transitioning it to Sky Pirates. I don't think otherwise, like, there's nothing here that makes it, oh, it's definitely Sky Pirates over Sea Pirates, but I don't think that matters.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, I pretty much said the exact same thing, so I won't repeat you, but I just love the fact that the tiles had flavor.
Yeah.
You know, it was something that was simple. It could have been like Azul. This tile is blue, but adding the actual hook and saber and all that stuff, I think that was in the original game as well, but it's just that was necessary to really make this game better.
Yeah, and I guess touching on some of the characters that at least stand out to me was like the scout. You know, that you play the scout, and they're the lowest number you can play, a one, so you would be the first person to go have your day power activate, and then it lets you see what everyone else played, and then change what your card is if you want to. The armorer gets you extra money if you get hooks and sabers. The aristocrat wants to be the only aristocrat on the ship because they don't want to be, around other people. The gunner.
Yeah, rich people don't want to be around rich people.
The gunner shoots somebody on the other ship. I don't know. I mean, I think there's a good level of thematic tie-in.
There is.
Yeah.
All right, so talking about gameplay and mechanisms now, I looked up what Board Game Geek said for game mechanisms, and I'm going to tweak it to my own kind of thoughts. So this is what I thought the combination was. Deduction meets drafting. Now, if I play this high initiative card because I really want this action in specific tile, what card could you play which may eliminate my card or discard that tile that I really want? Mm-hmm. So you focus on the cards that give me nighttime activations early in the rounds. You kind of have that decision. So like, do I go that route early on? There's so many interesting decisions to be had. you can't just focus on one of the given phases, the daytime phase, the nighttime phase. You have to try to play a card that works synchronous with the other decisions you've made throughout that round. But you also have to get in the head of your opponent, because you and I did a good job of that. I think he's going to play this card, so I'm going to play this card. Or I think he's going to play this card next, so I need to get higher on the initiative to try to beat him when I play the same card.
Yeah, and that hurt me. And that final, or I think second to last card we played, because I didn't pay quite enough attention, and I forgot that you had played the card that got you all the way up the initiative track, and I was like, I'm going to go first, and then I was, I'm not going to go
surprise.
First.
Oh, no.
yeah. But yeah, it didn't. I don't think it actually ultimately mattered. I don't think there was anything I could do at that point. No. But yeah, I have not played many games of that, the deduction aspect. The way I have heard of it referred to is kind of like that Princess Bride. I know that you know that you know that I know. It's kind of like, it's not social deception, it's social deduction. Mm-hmm. In that you're just trying to outthink your opponent, kind of. It's more so in the beginning. It gets less and less like that, I think, as you progress, because your hands change a little bit. Even though you always have the same starting six cards, you only play four in the first round, then five in the second round, and then six in the final round. So you don't end with the exact same cards. And so I think that's kind of an interesting mechanism. It's not my favorite, I guess. And I think that might be because I only played it at low player counts, the two and three. And I think I would have, I don't know. It doesn't surprise me based on other discussions we've had about, you know, Memoir 44 is the one that always comes to mind. That this is something I think you like outthinking in a 1v1 situation. And I like kind of the thinking what everybody's chaos is going to do together. But yeah, I think it's a cool mechanism by adding that daytime, nighttime tweak to it. So it's not as straightforward. Yep. But flow of the game.
Yeah, I thought flow was very quick and smooth.
Yeah.
Unlike that transition we just did. The initial round, I think, lasts longer because everyone has the same six set of cards. So that puzzle mentioned above comes into play. But later in the game, you can't necessarily always keep track of what others have or haven't played. So you kind of think of your own strategy at that point. But like, well, I really want that map tile because that's going to complete my set collection component. So I'm going to play this high initiative. And then all of a sudden you come in with a card. Oh, I thought you already played that guy that now knocks my guy off the ship or whatever.
Yeah, I agree. The flow here is very fast. I think first round has more of the thinkiness to it. And then first day of each, rounds are voyages. So the first voyage has the most because you're doing a lot of you have the same exact six cards, and then the first day of each voyage, you're looking at it and saying, okay, how do I want to play these? And then, at least for my style and your style, I think we pretty much knew what we were doing, and we were just like, boom, 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 boom. We had like, this is what I'm going to play for the next five rounds.
Or like, you look ahead on day five, it has a single treasure chest, and everybody wants the treasure chest. You're like, all right, so I have to play a high initiative then, but how can I set myself up for success early on based on reputation or whatever it is. Yeah. So you're trying to work backwards with someone, because it's like, I know I'm going to play this guy on this day. How do I set myself up to succeed that day?
Yeah. And flow always kind of leads into length of the game as well.
Yeah. So I think we mentioned it when you and I played the two-player game. How long of a game was that?
I think it was less than 30 minutes. Including setup, probably.
Yeah. I think that's a testament. I think the box actually says 45 minutes. I don't think that would change based on player count. I think you could go all the way up to six.
Right, yeah.
And you're going to roughly adhere to 45 minutes.
Yeah, because it's simultaneous pretty much. So it's not going to add incrementally more like some games that say 30 minutes per player or anything like that. I think this is... And this plays... Yeah, you said six, right? So, this could almost fill in that, like, Seven Wonders type situation where it's kind of light but still kind of thinky at the same time, and then plays really quick for a high player count.
Yeah, and that's a testament to the gameplay itself. Yeah. I think you can get somebody up and running or flying quickly enough with this teach.
Yeah.
But is it fun?
So I think I have to have a caveat on this. In that I...
Yes? Question mark?
I think this could be fun. I didn't not have fun, but I was just kind of neutral on it after all of my plays. And I think I just have been playing so many Euros lately that I really wanted to have an engine going. And like by playing cards to my ship, I just wanted to have this something flowing. And I felt like that was missing for me. Okay. And so I think if I played this at a higher player count, it would be a little more fun because that would really bring out the social deduction aspect of the game. For my tastes. So I don't think it's not fun, but I don't think it's neutral for me. I would play it again.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I wrote incredibly so. And I think I'm sort of in the rut that you were experiencing at the tail end of last year, that I've played some kind of poor games and they haven't been hitting or filling the holes for you, me, right? And that's our phrase. And this one, it's just something about it. Some of it is I really like Palomori's designs.
Yeah.
He's got Blitzkrieg and Caesar. I really like those. Again, two-player or like has a very cerebral thought process. Yeah. This game offers a lot of interesting decisions in a single card. You play the card for the initiative, for the day action, dusk action, night action, sail action. Like there's so many different things that on that card. Now, not all the cards have the same, all those actions, but you're still kind of taking that all into consideration. The one thing I will say, and this is a shock for Nicole, I'm sure, this is the Bozo moment. There is plenty of take that moments in this game, which fits with the pirate theme. And I don't necessarily hate that.
Yeah.
Because this is a short game. Shorter game, I'm less upset when something I just played immediately got taken away or something to that. It's only a 30-minute game. No big deal. We'll continue to move on.
Yeah.
But if you've been playing a game for 2 hours and then you steal all my men, a la Architects of the West Kingdom, I'm a little more irritated with that one.
It also, I mean, and I don't know if this factors into it for you at all, but it doesn't bother me because I didn't really have to make any decision to get to that point. I was given these cards. I have to play them at some point. Yeah. You know, like I didn't go out to the market and buy this card that is mean, or I didn't have any decision I wanted available and go do a mean action. So like if you are not into take that games, this still might be okay because like you said, it's short. There's not a real engine building that goes on. So even a take that action doesn't hurt that much, or at least you don't see how much it hurts directly when it happens usually, because all the scoring happens at the end of each voyage. And then, I think for whatever the reason I started with.
You didn't actively choose to take that action. It was given to you.
That's what it was.
I agree with that. The only other thing I will mention is, so we talked about the stormy side, the calm side. So different play styles, you can intermix the two. And that can also have a good way. So if I'm going to play with somebody that doesn't like to take that, I'm going to go calm.
Yeah.
And if somebody that wants a little more cutthroat, we go to stormy side. Or you want to mix in between.
Yeah.
So there's that as well. Leading into always with the within the fun section, I always talk about solo.
Yep.
So this is Automa Factory. Yeah, see, I got the pronunciation right. Actually went.
You've had so much practice aside here. With it now.
Yes, we went back and listened to our first couple of episodes on the drive down to South Carolina, and we were like trying to see continue the ways to improve and stuff. And I admit I was saying it wrong back then. Andrew, you were right. I'll never admit I was wrong to Nicole, but I will.
I did
have
a text message of you saying that because I remember I got in a fight with you about it.
Yeah. Well, Automa Factory struck gold with this one. I thought it was extremely smooth. The game introduces this solo deck where you flip a random card each turn. And in addition, another card will be picked. That was the, I'm forgetting the name of it now.
Plunder, I think is what it was.
Plunder, that's it. It's a dummy character that you'll never know what number they're going to pick off of that. So you really have to make an interesting decision throughout this solo mode. And you know what the AI is going to pick based on treasure tiles. They have an order that they want to pick from. But I don't know. This game is fantastic. The difficulty to it was well balanced. It made decisions like an opponent would, and I absolutely loved it. Easy to play, easy to reset, run it back again. Played it multiple times doing it. I really recommend the solo mode.
Nice. Yeah. I know when you first got it, you said you'd played it quite a few times, and we're really digging the solo mode. So.
Yeah.
I guess so that kind of leads into replayability. That's what I was going to say too.
Yeah. Because I'm curious to see what you're going to say about this.
So I think objectively, yes, there is a lot of replayability in just the variation of the way the cards come out. There's 40 different cards in any given game. You're only going to use 18, but even the order they come out in matters to your strategy. So I think there's definitely a lot of replayability. I don't think the game felt samey in any of the three I played. There's also two sides, like you mentioned, the calm side and the stormy side. And I don't think the stormy side, it is a little bit more take that, but I think it is just a lot tighter than the calm side. I only played the calm side once and I played stormy side twice. So I liked the tightness that it had. But then I would say, as far as my personal likelihood to play it again, I don't think unless we have a game night set up where we're having 4+ people that I will be likely to play this again. And I don't think it's anything to do with the variable setup, though. I guess this is the best place to bring it up is I'm a little disappointed in those, tiles that are in there that you can change the way that it's set up. So each of the amulets whatever has, so like there's two versions of the amulet, the calm side and the stormy side. And then there's a tile that comes with the game that also has a calm side and a stormy side on it, which is so that you could play the entire stormy side of the board, but have the calm version of the amulet if you wanted. Mm-hmm. I would rather have a third and fourth version of the amulet instead of that's just me personally. And we did play with the Automa version for a couple of them just to try that out, which you just had to be like, when it says your opponent and it then you just say any opponent, so like you had to house rule a little bit, but that was kind of how we made it work.
Yeah, I think those tiles is a functionality or functionability standpoint of if the board is facing north, anybody that's on the south end of the table can't see the tile, the wording and stuff like that. So then those tiles allow you to read them and kind of learn a little bit about it. I think of it as a functionality piece, which is something that is overlooked so much in our hobby.
Especially in a game that plays 5-6 players.
Yeah, trying to huddle everybody around that tight space. Now you can spread out those tiles a little bit. You could have a board on the left side of the table and then those tiles on the right side of the table. Because if you're that far away on the right side of the table, you could still read the treasure tiles, but you wouldn't read the fine print for what each of those treasure tiles does. Yeah. I know. I looked at it from the functionality.
No, but again,
that's kind of our own that's our own bias too, because I looked at this game favorable, so I'm going to keep thinking of favorable things like that.
Yeah,
right?
That's true.
It's bias. You just got to recognize it. The one thing I would say, replayability, some of the characters, I played it quite a lot, and they were starting to get a little stale for me. So I would start to see some character or some cards that I preferred and those I didn't want at all. Like especially one in the first voyage, if I got a couple of them, I wouldn't want to use them at all. I'd go through all three voyages. I would never touch those cards.
Yeah.
So the one thing I will say is this game is ripe for expansions, and I don't think you need to adjust a lot to make an expansion. I would keep the 40 cards just provide alternative actions. So that scout maybe gets a different action. So you can still have 40 cards. You don't need to go up to like 80 cards, because that's just stupid at that point. Right. But you now your scout, instead of doing the action of, you know, putting somebody else, it does something else for
you.
I don't know.
Would you think like that would replace the scout, right? So like you wouldn't play with both scouts in the deck. You would choose which scout to put into the deck. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's just an idea. Stegmeier, please send me my royalty check for that idea. I really appreciate it. But let's, how do we do scoring? It's been so long here.
Yeah.
We haven't scored a game, I think, in 2022 yet.
That might be the case, at least together for sure. Well, you guys didn't score Clank, right? So,
no.
Or Clank Legacy.
Although I think Mike did. Mike unofficially did.
Yeah.
I'll save those thoughts for another day.
All right. So here on Meeple Night, we score using a 5-point categorical scale, starting with 1, which is not fun, I would pass if asked to play. 2, game is okay, but not likely to hit the table. 3 is a good game, worth playing in the right situation. 4 is a great game, almost always willing to play it, just need to have access to it. And 5, an amazing game. This baby is among my favorites, and I must own it. Although, I feel like Must Owns It is probably more like a 4, but I don't know. We're not rebranding. No.
Yeah, well, you giving Paleo a 3. You should try to refigure that. This is a trash game that's trash, trash, trash.
I have problems with scoring in general.
You do. Well, I'll get straight to it. I think this is going to come as no surprise. I really enjoyed playing this game. In fact, when I was first playing it, my initial thought was, wow, this was what I wanted Red Rising to be. It's a quick playing, strategic game with fun components and easy to understand rules. I'm pretty sure I can get somebody up and running on the rules within about 5 minutes. Beyond that, just read the cards. Ease of play for such a strategic, thought-provoking game is hard to find. I've been playing a lot of mediocre games before, or lately, as I mentioned. This is one that just hit perfectly for me. Yes, it needs to improve on replayability. And maybe in the long run, it doesn't say the score. But after playing it so many times in such short succession, this game's a 5 for me.
Whoa! Josh has given us a game a 5?
I know. It's shocking. I really love this game.
I think you have been swayed by Mike as well, which I have to say, I liked the comment that he gave in Clank when he said that, I don't know, I just, you tell me what the category is, and so that's what I just say that that's what it is. And so that's what I'm going with. That's my new method, because I think that's what I originally intended it to be, and then I started trying to do math to make the scores work out. And, All right. Well, I'm a bookkeeper, man. I want to do math. All right.
Nerd.
So keep it short and simple for me. I think this is a 2. That the game is okay, not likely to hit the table, which I think is probably not surprising based on some of the comments I gave earlier, that I want to play this at a higher player count. Otherwise, I'm probably not going to be playing it again. And I think it's just that that social deduction, I prefer that to, like I said, happen with multiple people rather than just trying to be in some one other person's head and just playing like, I know that you know that you know that I know that you know that I know that little mental gymnastics. But I mean, I know that I think you enjoy that a little bit, at least.
Even if I'm not good at it.
Yeah. So just not my personal cup of tea. And I think I'm letting fun kind of rule most of this score, but. That's okay.
And that's okay. Yeah. This one, it's a different game.
Yeah.
And hopefully our discussion there kind of shows that's what's so unique about the hobby is that one game can provoke so many different thoughts and kind of have the unique stories behind it.
Yep. Alrighty. So I guess that means Meeple Night gives this a total score of a 7. And finally, we'll share some of our favorite gaming moments.
So this was a topic that came about when when you spend 12 hours in a car, your mind starts kind of racing and finding ways to improve. And I heard some other content creators talking about stories and games. And really when it comes down to it is sometimes you can play a bad game, but have a good experience with it. Other times you can have a great game and the people around the table make it even better. So that's what it kind of, especially with, as I mentioned, I've been playing some mediocre games lately. And I wanted to reflect back on the better times, right? Yeah. So needless to say, none of the games that I'm going to have stories on are going to be solo games. So that kind of ruins that out. But yeah, it was the, I'll just cut straight to it, is the first one I wanted to mention was one that was, I don't think I'll ever forget. And that was last June in for our Meeple Night Con. We decided to play the game Ice Cool. Mm-hmm. We just randomly pulled it off the shelf. Nobody had planned to do this. And Ice Cool is this weird little flicking of penguins game that you, they're wobbles, weebles.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. They have a weebles weight at wobble, the bottom. But they don't fall down.
Yeah. So all you're trying to do is flick a weighted penguin through these doors to catch fish. And you're trying to avoid the hall monitor, who, if the hall monitor hits you, they take your hall pass. And if they hit you again, you're taken out of the game. And you're just trying to collect fish. I just remember teaching y'all how to play the game, like how to specifically flick the penguins, mm-hmm. and saying how difficult it was to get them to jump over the walls. And during my very first turn of the game, I flicked the head of the little penguin. He jumps over and hits Jeff. And Jeff was like, "Dear God, we've got an assassin." And I also remember being awful after that. I couldn't flick it through any of the yeah. doors, which were only supposed to be shots, easier. Yeah. Yeah. And what I will say is the memory of this game will last longer than the gameplay itself. Because I don't remember who won. I think Jeff did. But that's immaterial.
Right.
It was the fact that the three of us had so much fun flicking stupid little weighted penguins.
Yeah, and I think it's awesome that it's one that, because that was a day that we had like each, I think we each picked a game and yep. we're supposed to teach that game. And that was one that just, we're like, meh. We have some time while we're waiting for whatever dinner to get picked up, or Nicole was picking the kids up from daycare or something. I don't remember what it was.
I think that's what it was.
And so we just decided, yeah, let's play Ice Cool. And so, yeah, that was, sometimes those random things are the ones that stick out the most.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess I'm going to go kind of in chronological order for mine. Cause I need to have some reason to pick 1, 2, 3, 4 or 1, 2, 3. So mine is going to start with One Night Werewolf way back in 2017. So I had a group of law school friends that used to play with us. This was before Ava was born or just after she was born. And so we would play this for like 3 or 4 hours and do this once a week. And the second night we played, one of my buddies, Will, who's... side note, ended up being valedictorian of the law school class, so makes sense why this strategy was so intelligent and crazy good. But for those who have played One Night Werewolf, him and I were werewolves, and there was one other person at the table who was a mason. So masons wake up and look at each other and verify that each other are good guys, like we're the masons. So as soon as we woke up, he said, "Well, Andrew and I are the masons, so we're good." And I was like, "Yep." the guy next to him was like, "No, that's impossible. You guys were not the masons, because I was the mason. I was by myself." And then Nicole said she was the seer, which is the person who looks, and she was actually the minion. And it's like, "Oh no, I saw, and they were masons." And through the 5-minute discussion, we had convinced the guy who was the mason that he had looked at his card incorrectly and that he was a werewolf. Oh, he was like, "I guess I don't know how to play this game." And I looked at it. At the end, he looked at it and was like, "Oh my God, are you freaking kidding me?" That was a fun... That specific moment is what solidified that game for me. But yeah.
Which is also why it's in your top ten of all time.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a few other little random ones. That was my favorite event that ever happened. But that's... You know, the story that happens in that game. Because, you know, that's a series of 5-minute games that you don't care who wins at the end of the night.
Yeah. And I think that's sometimes that leads into the story too. Is it's not a kind of talk about who doesn't matter who wins or loses. It's just kind of the what was your takeaway from that experience? Yeah. You'll never forget that. Well, the next one is in honor of ARP, which is a conference that us radiologists have to go to up in DC. And my buddy Jeff and I have been playing Gloomhaven for a long period of time at this point. And we decided we had a month in DC together and we were going to decompress with some Gloomhaven. We also, since our friend Rob, who actually wasn't like we knew of him, but we weren't super close until this conference, the three of us started a continuing the campaign of Gloomhaven. Nice. And there was one section, I can't remember if it was during the expansion or not, but you were supposed to get up a hill because these minions, it doesn't matter. I don't want to ruin stories, right. But there's rocks falling down the hill. And each given round, after everybody's played their cards, the rocks would move a certain amount of hexes. So it was calculated of how far those would move. Jeff was using a character that could fly, like, or he had like
flying
six
boots
movement
or a
something.
Bunch of jumps or something. Yeah,
yeah. He could move quickly. I was using a teleporter, so I could boop, boop,
yeah.
from one spot to the other. Rob, I think his best movement was two or three. Poor Rob, every time he would try to, reminds me of like Gimli from Lord of the Rings. He's not quite keeping up with the rest of them. Anytime he would advance up this hill, a rock would hit him or like something else would happen. Yeah. He just kept sliding down, down, down. He was so miserable. But it came to the thing of even now, the three of us will joke about those stupid rocks.
Yeah. Yeah.
We were able, the mission itself was extremely difficult because it was scaled for three players, but our third player was never engaged at all. So Jeff and I had a miraculous moment to like defeat this mission. And meanwhile, even when we were in the final like boss room area, poor Rob was still at the bottom of this.
That's still
cliff,
only
just
counts
getting
as
pummeled.
One.
Yeah. So it was something stupid, but it was one even to this day. We're looking at, you know, 2+ years after that experience yeah. now, I guess 2 years after, and we're still joking about it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, Gloomhaven, I feel like, has a lot of possibilities for those moments, which is why I am also going to share a Gloomhaven moment.
Ooh. Crossover.
Crossover gaming moment. Different scenario. This was one that was in a forest level where there was a bunch of oozes attacking you. I think it was either a side mission or part of the journal quests, which I don't want to spoil anything. So what it actually was isn't that relevant. I was a character who was able to go invisible a lot. I think you might have called him Angry Eyes.
Sure. Because we never wanted to spoil what the actual characters were, so we just made up nicknames for them all.
And so We got to the point that everyone else had died and it was just me and six other oozes. And we had decided the only way to survive now is to just have me run around the board far enough away from them and being invisible as much as possible and hope that they sacrifice themselves to death.
Oh, yeah.
And that was exactly what happened after like just for 12 rounds or something crazy. I don't remember the exact number. It was just plopping around the board, staying invisible as they kept reproducing themselves and slowly killing themselves off. And when it happened, we were like, well, that is a way to beat that level, I guess.
Yeah. Oh.
Technicalities.
Oozes are the absolute worst in that game.
Yeah. And that was probably a situation where it was, because I think that card reshuffles their deck. And I think we got lucky playing with the helper app that day. You know, just the way the randomization was happening, it was coming up enough. But hey, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, it's part of the strategy, right? Yeah,
it is.
It didn't break the system. You understood what the assignment was, and you succeeded. That character. I think that was Jeff's favorite character too.
That was my favorite. Yeah, for sure.
Well, The last story I was going to mention tonight was actually a recent memory. And this was playing the game early on with one of my colleagues and his family. And what truly made this special was that during the game itself, everybody was joking around. And it just had one of those lighthearted airs to it that Orleans is not necessarily a complicated game by any means, but the table presence that everyone had, we were all having a good time, and yet we were still able to stay focused enough on the game that everything was relatively pretty tight scoring-wise, except for me. I was awful that night. But the best part, this is why I remembered it the most, was that the ladies were just so darn good. I think halfway throughout the game, I realized I was fighting for third or fourth or last. But, you know, it was one of those, I knew I was going to lose. And I was okay with that. Because, again, playing games isn't about winning or losing. Yeah. It's about the stories you remember while you're playing it. So this is one of those that...
Have you been doing yoga this week?
No.
Meditating?
I
reading Star Wars Jedi books? What's going on?
Well, I mean, again, trying to convince Veronica to name our kid Jedediah Isaiah. But it's one of those instances that these girls, they played almost a flawless game. And it was so cool to see somebody play that well. Yeah. And I didn't care about winning or losing. It wasn't like my poor effort was helping them perform better.
Right.
So it was part great game design. And it was just awesome of who was playing at that table. Yeah. It's a night that we won't forget.
Cool. Yeah, that's... I mean, I think that is part of the fun of some Euro games where there's not super high levels of interaction where you can witness someone else play a great game and not, you know, be like, wow, I can learn from that and all, or just admire it.
Yeah, this was a lot of admiring. Yeah. And
I could never learn.
Especially, well, Veronica was so nervous because in her mind, Orleans was a complex game. Mm. And yet none of us even helped her.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, hey, you know what? You should take that action. She made her own decisions because there was enough other stuff going on with my flailing game board. But she did so well. So I was just proud of her for that. And both the girls at the table did fantastic. Nice. So I have to tip my cap to them.
Nice. Yeah, my last moment will be... kind of a similar like general night thing that happened rather than a specific moment in a game. And that was how Nicole and I played Aeon's End together. So we basically, all the Aeon's End we have played, we've just done it in three nights in what we call like high school night. So we get a 2 liter of Mountain Dew and we split that across the night, which sharing with Nicole and Andrew mostly means Andrew gets about 3/4 of it and Nicole gets about 1/4 of it. Though Mountain Dew is closer to half and half, I think. Might be her weakness.
Is it just regular Mountain Dew or is it like Code Red?
I think it's usually Livewire. Nicole still cares about them calories. Quick sidetrack. We just got the Zevia soda they have at Sam's Club. It's actually pretty good. I mean, it tastes kind of
better.
It's like RC Cola. You know, it doesn't taste like a Coke or a Pepsi, but it's still decent. But anyways, so we have like this high school night where we stayed up till like 3 a.m. And this is why we had kids for all of them. So just like suck it up on a Friday night, play Aeon's End for 6 hours and just cruise through the legacy campaign. So we did that like 2 Fridays in a row, and then we did the same thing for whatever the third one is. I'm forgetting at the moment. Not Outcasts. I don't know.
War Eternal?
No, War Eternal is the second one. We haven't played the first and second one. I don't know.
I can't help you.
Yeah, that's fine. So we've done that 3 times, and I think that's probably why Aeon's End sits up so high for me. It's just that it kind of has that fun nostalgia feel of like when we used to have buddies over for a LAN party or just hanging out over some pizza and soda for late into the night. But, you know, as a parent, it's hard to do that every weekend. So you have to plan your high school weekend. It's probably a lot less effective as a high schooler, but it's a good time for us.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's sort of like trying to plan date night when you have a bunch of kids.
Yep. Yep. Same concept.
That's cool.
No way to get around age.
Well, we all get older.
Yeah.
Unless you're Benjamin Button.
The new age. That's what it is. Aeon's End, the new age.
New age. Gotcha. Well, my copy of Aeon's End will arrive
this week.
Tomorrow afternoon.
You get that all?
It's later. Yeah, the Kickstarter. I just got the legacy ones.
Oh, yeah. Legacy of Gravehold and just Legacy. Yeah.
Yeah. Because you told me to play Legacy first.
Yeah, and I think realistically, unless you absolutely fall in love with the game, you will get enough out of Aeon's End Legacy and Legacy of Gravehold that you don't need to have. I know it's hard to accept, but you don't need to have all of those other ones because realistically, replayability is still pretty high just out of the Legacy game even.
Gotcha. So. Yeah, I already purchased the regular Aeon's End as well as one of the expansions because they were like $15 on Amazon or something like absurd.
Oh, yeah. Because
I thought that was the way I was supposed to start. And then you said, no, do Legacy first. So then I haven't played any of it.
Well, you have it then. So it doesn't.
Yep. It'll come.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Meeple Night. Hopefully everyone appreciated kind of the stories behind games. It's not just about the game itself. It's not about winning or losing. It's not about whoever advances their pawn the highest on a Euro or who rolls the last kill shot in a Ameritrash game.
Does that need to change our intro? A podcast about board games, past, present, and future. We don't talk about stories.
Yeah.
A podcast about board games, past, present, and future, and their stories. We'll have to work on
and there's and the stories behind them.
The stories behind them. Ooh,
it feels like that leads into like a Goosebumps or something like that. Tales of Horror. Now that Dice Tower podcast is over, but you know, just kind of again tweaking the setup to this podcast. So any feedback is still greatly appreciated, and hopefully you enjoy tonight's banter and discussion about Libertalia and those arguably great pirates if you're me or if those arguably not so great pirates if you're Andrew and just the great stories that happen when you're playing a bunch of cardboard on a table.
Yeah, thanks for listening and we'll see you in a fortnight.
Good night
and good luck. Thanks for listening to Meeple Night. Today's episode was recorded in Charlottesville, Virginia on March 20th, 2022 and uploaded using Anchor. Our theme music is All Night by Declan DP, provided by Audio Library Plus, which provides free and safe music for content creators. For all the latest from Meeple Night, follow us on Instagram, join our Facebook group, or email us at meeplenightpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back in 2 weeks, so until then, dream a little dream of games.